Good morning and happy Thursday. Hope you've had a good week so far and a great weekend upcoming. But right now it's Thursday. That means time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being at the other end of the radio waves and the various ways we have of communicating with each other other than radio when it comes to things such as email and the Twitter feed and Instagram and Facebook and all of that kind of good stuff. If you're using the old-fashioned telephone, though, that's easy. 414-1234 is the local number. If it's long distance from you to us, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. It really does seem a long time ago, but there was a time in our country when many little girls were told in no uncertain terms what kinds of activities and even jobs were okay for them, and also what jobs and activities were not okay for them. And those messages came from a whole bunch of places, like parents and teachers, and even the role models and the images that you would see on TV could communicate that type of thing. That sort of overt influence has certainly waned over the years, but the pressure that American girls still face in so many instances to meet specific and even limited expectations continues in a bunch of quarters. But if you give options and opportunities and enthusiastic support, well, girls and young women are finding new worlds of possibilities opening up to them. So on this morning's Perspectives, we're going to meet some folks and learn about some organizations helping to provide those options and opportunities and support right here in our capital city area. And we'll find out what impacts they're having, too. So let's say hi first to a lady very, very close to all of us, especially us at WFSU, who is Kim Kelling, our director of content for WFSU Public Media. It is great to see you and hear you in here, Kim.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me this opportunity to talk a little bit about some of the work we've done here at the station.
We also have some folks to meet here from the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory, our crown jewel of research in the capital city area. And first, we'll say hi to Carlos Villa, director of the Summer Camp for Girls program that's kicking off there Monday?
Our co-ed camp starts Monday. SciGirls starts in July.
That's right. Yes. And we'll find out more about SciGirls and all that, too. And we have a very good friend and coworker of you, Roxanne Hughes, who heads up the MagLab Center for Integrating Research and Learning on the line. Hello, Roxanne.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, great to have you there. So I understand that you would normally be joining us in person, but meetings call today, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. She said with a great deal of enthusiasm in her voice. We know where that comes from. Erica McKibben joins us here in studio, Executive Director of Girls on the Run. Hey, Erica.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having us. I love that we're having a conversation about this. It's something that we really focus on in Girls on the Run, is giving girls power and voice over their lives. And I would love to learn more about what's going on in our community and how people can plug in.
Well, that is terrific. Another person we're going to be interfacing with very shortly is Trish Hansen. She is the Lord High Head Person of a MoLab, which is a fascinating exercise in trying to get more young ladies involved in untraditional kinds of things. But let's start off with you, Kim, if we just could, on this. And the whole genesis of this particular program was to bring more public awareness on the kinds of resources that are available out there. But first, a statement of problem. We're going here back to, I guess, school as we kick things off. Why are we even talking about this? Why is this even still a thing?
You know, I think that there's just a disconnect for a lot of people about the role women play in our society. I mean, we witnessed it in the past election. For some reason, there's still a ceiling there for many women, and then that translates to young women in the path that they can take. It seems like just as we overcome some of these areas and we see amazing leadership and the value of women in our society, something comes and kicks us back down to the curb. So there can never be enough of these types of programs that help inspire young women to find their voice, to find their path, whether it's through empowerment through running and learning that they are strong, or whether it's through the sciences or the arts, whatever it is, I just think that we cannot do enough to help young girls turn into the young women who will bring new opportunity within our country and our community.
One area that always seems to be dominated predominantly by males, and that we talk about so much in this venue and other ways, are the areas of science, technology, engineering, and math, the STEM kind of thing. And Carlos Villa, working over at the Mag Lab, that is in many ways still a seething hotbed of testosterone. You've got a lot of guys that just have fallen into those areas that still do research over there. Are you seeing more women, though, prowling the halls of the Mag Lab and getting involved in the kinds of things that normally that was guy stuff?
Mm-hmm. Slowly but surely we are. One of my favorite things is when I'm giving a tour, I'm bringing someone through the building, I like to show the diversity that's in the building, and that we've got scientists that look in every different way, tall, short, fat, skinny, men, women, from all sorts of backgrounds working at the lab. So it's definitely changing.
Okay. And Roxanne Hughes, while we're still over at the Mag Lab, and you are over there right now, how do you encourage more young women particularly to look upon these areas as potential career moves for them, where they'll feel comfortable saying, hey, that's something I think I can do?
So I think it's great, the group that you have together today, because the media plays a role, as does seeing people in non-traditional fields, maybe. And at the beginning of the segment, the lead-in that you gave was that it used to be that, you know, one ads were segregated by sex. Like, women could only apply for certain ads, and this was, like, in the early 70s and before. But now, instead of being explicit, I think institutions and organizations are more implicit about it. So if you currently we're seeing better demonstrations of women in the media, and that's like television and radio and a more diverse representation of potential role models. But we're still dealing with trying to show people, and young girls in particular, that there are opportunities out there for them and that there are people that look like them or that they can even succeed. The concept, if you've never heard about computer science or you've only seen computer science as either like a nerdy version of a hacker, as opposed to a hacker that might be nerdy but also loves rock climbing or running, you know, like all of these other options, you start to close down and you don't see that it's even potentially there for you. So even holding SciGirls and camps and programs opening access doesn't necessarily get them. So you have to get out there in the community and talk about, like, here's the potential of what this program can do, or just what running can do with, like, Girls on the Run to empower you, to make you feel physically strong, or what going to a SciGirls camp or a coding camp can do. And a lot of times girls or parents have never even thought about their children being involved in these. They weren't even a potential out there on the radar screen of what is out there for them to do. So it's not just holding the programs, but it's also getting out into the community and making sure people know that they're available and the benefits that can come from participating in them.
You talk about getting out into the community. That is something that is part and parcel of an organization and a actual vehicle called MoLab, which was co-founded by Trish Hansen, and she joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Trish.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Hey, we're doing real good. Why don't you give us a little quick primer on exactly what MoLab is for the benefit of folks who may not be aware of who you guys are and what you do.
Sure. Thank you for that. MoLab is short for Mobile Science Laboratory. Amy Hills and I co-founded it. We'll be celebrating or going into our fifth fiscal year starting July 1. But the whole concept is equal access, and getting into the community is very important. And so we're mobile. We go to schools. We go to after-school programs, community events, outreaches, libraries, and really the sky's the limit. We've been into Georgia. We've been into North Florida. And the idea is providing equal access to science education to a diverse audience in a broad geographic area. And then when schools not in, we host our camp programs.
Now, you and Mario from the city of Tallahassee were in the other day. You were talking about the TAP-based environmental camp that you guys got cooking this summer, right?
That's correct, yes. We've partnered with the City of Tallahassee, Think About Personal Pollution, to do environmental science, hands-on experiences that focus on non-point source pollution. And those will be located at 6 different community centers in Tallahassee for 8 weeks. It's an 8-week series.
All right. We want to get a little bit more into that. And before we take a break, which is rapidly bearing down on us, Erica McKibben, Girls on the Run, again, an overview, the 30,000-foot view of your program, which you're also celebrating an anniversary now, too.
Yes, we just finished our 7th season here in the Big Bend, and our program really is targeted for girls 3rd through 8th grade, and as I mentioned before, it's about giving them voice and power over their lives. Over 10 weeks, a lot of people talked about role models. We connect them with caring adults who are coaches that meet with them twice a week after school, and it is about building life skills, how to navigate those life challenges, and using running as a vehicle for self-discovery. Tom, I don't know if you ever get out there and run. But for those of you that are runners, you know that it isn't always easy in the beginning. And we get lots of girls where they say, I'm not sure I can do this. But by the end of the 10 weeks, they not only learn how to make healthy choices, have healthy relationships, give back through to their community through service, but they become empowered by thinking, I mean, third grade, they're out there finishing 3.1 miles. And that is transformative. Girls who come into this program and they thought, I can't run. And guess what? They finish and they do it. And then you have family members watching them and getting inspired by that. And so it is almost like a revolution that happens within that family and within our community, which is believing that girls can be strong, confident, and guess what? They can do anything.
And what I love to see in the 7 years now that Girls on the Run has been going on here in our area is standing at that finish line and watching the family groups that come barreling across there. And the little gals are out in front, and there's mom and dad bringing up the rear, you know, out of breath and out of shape and all, which is it's still, but they finish together, and that
they
is
do.
So cool. We're taking a quick time out here on Perspectives as we talk about empowering women and young girls. We'd like to hear your experiences, too. Why don't you give us a ring at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 for Perspectives right here on WFSU-FM. We are back on Perspectives, empowering young women and girls on this morning's program. And a quick plug for the Oasis Center for Women and Girls, Haley Cutler and those guys. The Women Can Run registration has now opened up. That improves the lives of women and girls through celebration and support. In case you don't know what Oasis Center is, this is a nonpartisan program which encourages and trains women to run for public office. That has been something that we've talked about in many different aspects over the years here on this station and also on WFSU-TV. So if you are a woman who's considering throwing your hat into the ring now, remember, 2018 election coming up, you can head over to the registration page and register to attend. It is coming up, let's see, register before July 15th. You get an early bird rate, et cetera, et cetera. And this will be taking place, here we go, September 1st through 3rd in downtown Tallahassee. So go to womencanrun.org and you can find out some more about that program. Programs also in abundance on the STEM thing. And Kim Kelling, if we can go back and talk a little bit about SciGirls, which was one of the, Genesis programs that we got involved with at WFSU, mm-hmm. along with the Mag Lab and some other partners.
Right. Back in 2006, we saw WFSU had an opportunity to pursue a grant to build a program to engage girls in science. And we partnered with the Mag Lab, and that was, you know, I can't believe we're going into our 12th season of SciGirls. So, and it grew from one program to two programs. So now we target girls rising sixth graders through ninth graders, two programs, SciGirls 1, SciGirls 2. And, you know, I think that we realized we were fulfilling a real need. This program, always we have more applications than we can take. It's always hard to select who gets to participate. But the impact that we see, and I just personally, my niece came up from Orlando to do this program, stayed with us so that she could do it because her mom felt there was just nothing like this anywhere. And Renee had such a passion for science. So she did this program. She came, did SciGirls 1 and 2. And she's about to – well, she just graduated the other night from high school. She's going to go to the University of Colorado in Boulder, and she wants to be an environmental engineer. And her mother told me that SciGirls is what really helped Renee navigate who she is in the world and made her realize that she can be a smart, strong woman and that she could have a career in science, and that it was really SciGirls who helped her kind of navigate that. And that's just one of many stories that we have been told about the impact that SciGirls has had on so many young girls' lives. I mean, they just feel they get introduced to so many areas of science. They get to see women as scientists. That's a critical part of the program, is being able to see science as something they can do.
Carlos Villa, you were talking about another success story out in the lobby when you first came in, a young woman who essentially now is going to be headed for the skies on the basis of that.
Yeah. As Kim was talking, I was thinking of at least a dozen examples that I can think of these students that come in through the summer camps, and then SciGirls becomes a family. It's not mm-hmm. just a camp, because after they finish the summer camp, the next year, if they're old enough, they can come back to volunteer. They start to become mentors. And that's one of the important tenets of SciGirls, is that the students are able to see positive role models. And so we've got one girl. I was just writing a scholarship recommendation letter for her this morning. She's off to Embry-Riddle. She did SciGirls 1. She did SciGirls 2. She came back to volunteer. She did the video editing for the summer camp. She volunteered with the summer camp. She's come back to open house to volunteer at the Magnet Lab. And she's done all this. And now she's going to Embry-Riddle to pursue her bachelor's in aeronautical engineering.
She's really going to be a rocket scientist.
and I'm looking forward to her coming back during the summers and, again, speaking to the students, because I know she's going to ask for it. One of the volunteers this summer is a former SciGirl from one of the very, very first years, who is pursuing her PhD at Georgia Tech now. And she's coming back to volunteer for SciGirls for the summer. She got her bachelor's at one of the California universities. I want to say it was Stanford or Caltech or one of those, but she's off to Georgia Tech right now pursuing her PhD in chemical engineering. And there are several examples. My mind's full of students that come in, do one camp, do another camp, do one of our middle school mentorship programs that we have, come back as a high school intern, volunteer when they get the opportunity. And a lot of that is that they get to meet these I can think of one right now. She met a female scientist at the lab and absolutely fell in love, not just with the field of science, but with the scientist herself. And she wants to come back, and she was able to come back and mentor with that scientist
that
and work
Dr.
in the
McKenna?
Lab. It is Dr. McKenna. She's a little bit
she's
of a rock star.
She's a favorite for a lot of the young girls.
She is. And that's great, because she is showing them, hey. And one thing I love about Dr. McKenna is that she didn't come through the traditional courses to become a scientist. And she can show them, look, just because you weren't there, just because you didn't do these steps, you can still become just about anything. And yep. She did. She's a PhD because of that.
Okay. And Roxanne Hughes, what does that do as far as the makeup of a major research institution such as the Mag Lab or any of the other, the Lawrence Livermore Lab out in California or any place else where you have more of a balance in the makeup of the staff, of the research people? What does that mean?
Well, it gives – so at any of these organizations, you'll have our senior staff like Dr. McKenna, and then you'll also have graduate students, postdocs, and undergraduates. And it creates this kind of tier of potential role models. So oftentimes, PsyGirls, they're middle school girls, and if they hear from, you know, someone my age, it's not as impactful as if they hear from a 20-year-old undergraduate who's majoring in engineering. And there's opportunities for middle school students to see a variety of ages, to see people at different levels so they can ask those questions, because they're looking at the next step. What's the next step? What do I do in high school to get to college? What is undergraduate degrees like? What are graduate school programs like? And then they can also talk to the scientists about their daily work. So it gives them the advantage of getting to meet people at all different levels in their career and get a sense of, like, how do I prepare for this? It's also, for our PsyGirls camp, we have a panel at the end of the camp, and the parents are invited to participate in that panel discussion as well. And the parents get to ask questions, because sometimes the girls have certain questions that they want to know, and the parents have the more, the questions of cost and those kinds of things. So it gives them an opportunity to hear from scientists at different levels in their career and get an idea of what to expect. And it gives the scientists, there's not much research out there, but scientists get involved in mentoring and serving as role models, and there's a real sense of giving back to the community and giving back to in education and outreach, and they really want to participate in this. So we see a lot of that, too. We have people contact us, and we don't have enough hours in the day to give an opportunity to all the scientists who contact us who want to work with our camps. So that's really... That's so powerful, too, to know that people want to give back like that.
And Roxanne, how many of those scientists have said, oh, man, I wish there was a program like this when I was a young girl?
99.999%.
That sounds like a scientific average number. But with all this multitude of resources and mentors and opportunities and people just cheering on these young women, there still are some pitfalls and speed bumps and that in the way, and a lot of hangover type attitudes. And could you talk about that, Erica McKibben, a little bit here? You're still seeing, and it's not a deliberate attempt to hold people back. That's not what I'm saying. But there still are a lot of ingrained attitudes that, well, here's what guys do and here's what girls do, and we shouldn't be mixing the two.
Yes, and I don't know how we're going to get over that. I think that's just kind of part of our world. I think we can have great programs like this, but I think it is creating a community. That's what we try to do with Girls on the Run and what it sounds like that is happening with PsyGirls. We want, girls specifically, I want empowerment for everyone, right? Let's live in a world, and it's probably a utopia, but where everyone is recognized for the gifts that they bring, and how can we lift people up in that process? And what I have seen in the power of our community is that one of my favorite running buddies is a Girls on the Run dad. And it's very different for a girl to have a female. And sometimes I will tell you the girls prefer, I want a girl. Yeah. I don't want to run with my dad. What? He's a guy. I don't want to run with him. But to have those dads get out there, and I don't know if they realize the power of their message, because there are so many unspoken rules or things that girls absorb or women absorb. I mean,
in our culture.
Exactly.
Just the media itself.
We are the way we need to look. I mean, that's a lot of what our girl conversations are about, to have girls worried about how skinny, how fat I am, what clothes I have, who my friends are. And so we're trying to unlearn these centuries-old stereotypes. But I want to go back to those dads. Those dads choose to go out there, and there is something special. There is an unspoken word. And we're a happy pace organization, by the way. We're not creating track stars or Olympians, but maybe you might. Yeah. A lot of our girls went on to do cross country and really have found a passion for running. But it is girls showing that men and women are equal, and that I am here to support you and to celebrate you. And I think if we really take it back to that very basic level, if we could all try and lift each other up and know that we're not going to all be perfect, but if we could really spread the resources, not only in the love, the jobs, in opportunity, then how different would our world be?
I agree. You know, Tom, it was really interesting. When we first started SciGirls, we intentionally made it an all-girls program. And we definitely got pushback, like, why are you doing this just for girls? But one of the things that we learned repeatedly, because we do post surveys of all of our girls that participate, is the importance of having that safe space of being with just girls. Mm-hmm. It changes the dynamic of how these girls perceive themselves. Suddenly, they don't feel there's less competition. They don't feel like they have to dress a certain way or be a certain way. They're not intimidated to raise their hand. It just gives them a place where they can be girls. And I do think that that's important. Just like there's Boy Scouts, there's places where you can be free to be who you are in a similar sex group. And I think that those are valuable places that we can have. And so creating a place called SciGirls does not mean that I don't want boys to have equal opportunities. I have a son. I want him to have opportunities. I just think that, sometimes we need to create places that are specifically where especially a young person can kind of find their voice.
I remember growing up, and full disclosure, I actually went to an all-boys high school, parochial high school, and there were two parochial girls high schools that were nearby. It made for very interesting interaction during lunch period and before and after school. But the rest of the time, it was a gender segregated kind of situation. And it set up a different dynamic. It really, really did. Trish Hansen, since MoLab deals here in the public school system, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, just listening to what everyone's saying, the keys are opportunities, not limiting the access for all. And it's interesting about the whole gender identity. I was on NPR and heard it not too long ago about six-year-old girls' gender beliefs about intelligence and the study with boys and girls. And they showed them images of two women and two men, and someone was dressed as a doctor. And so by the ages of 5 to 6, the girls identified, they were asked the question, who's intelligent in this picture? Or who do you think is smarter? And the girls identify with girls, and the boys identify with boys. And then at the age of 6, and as they start getting older, and they start getting into the school system, where they tend to do a little bit better than boys at that age, they start thinking that, well, I can't be a doctor, or I can't be an engineer, because that's a boy's role. I'm not that smart. I'm a girl. Girls are supposed to do this. And I think for MoLab and what we try to have, this all-inclusive mentality of giving them that access, making them aware of the limits or the unlimitless and the possibilities of what's out there for them, and introducing that at such a young age, I think is key. Because if they're not given that opportunity to even experience science, how are they going to know that that's something out there for them that they're going to want to do later on in life,
Really good point. And something else that we need to look at is not just gender-specific role models, but sometimes also age-specific role models. There are generations of folks who have been brought up under the tyranny, if you will, of some of these stereotypes. I am thinking very vividly of an older lady of my acquaintance who at age 63 decided, I want to be a neurologist. And she had had no formal medical training at all, but she got accepted at medical school. She at least had a master's degree in another subject, went on, and at age 66, she got certified, and now she is a top-rated neurologist, worked in Tallahassee for a while, and then moved to South Florida. Talk about reinventing yourself. So this does not necessarily have to take place at age 4, 5, or 6. This can go on into other areas as well. But although I don't know, I would kind of like to go to some of these camps that I'm hearing about right now, because I was not that good in science, guys.
And I think that's what happens is, and that comes up a lot in the discussions with the SciGirls, is that we put people in boxes, and then it's hard to get out of those boxes. And for, whatever science is usually first introduced in school, sometimes not in the most exciting way. It tends to be from a book, very little hands-on. So we've put science, this thing around science, that it's only special people who can do it. And I think that what happens when girls give them and boys give themselves a chance to explore in science fields, and they get to do the hands-on, and they get to see the discovery that goes on, and then they see role models who are doing that, it opens up doors to them. And even if we've had many of our women scientists who've been on our panel say, you know, science was hard, math was hard, but I had mentors that helped me through it, and I wanted it so much that I pursued, and I was persistent. So giving us that it's okay that it's hard and that we can rise to the challenge if we want this is a good message. And let's take the boxes away from people. I love it that the 60-year-old woman had a view for herself and wasn't limited by age. We tend to want people to conform in our world, and we're a little threatened when they don't.
Powerful people, male and female, we're talking about here on Perspectives, and we invite your comments and your calls at 414-1234, the local number 800-926-8809, or perspectives@wfsu.org if email is your preferred form of communication. And a quick reminder, you can always find the program online at wfsu.org. Just go to that URL, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, click Perspectives, and we archive past shows, try to have the newest one up there within just a couple, 3 hours after the program actually airs. And while you're there, check out some of the other features we have on the newly redesigned and more user-friendly WFSU.org. We'll be right back. Have an all-star panel of mentors and cheerleaders and folks who are really working hard in the community to expand the range of possibilities for women and young girls. If you're just joining us, Kim Kelling, our director of content for WFSU, Carlos Villa, director of the National High Magnetic Field Summer Camp for Girls, and in Roxanne Hughes, who heads up the Center for Integrating Research and Learning at the Mag Lab, Erica McKibben, executive director, Girls on the Run, and Trish Hansen, who is co-founder and Lord High Head Honcho of MoLab. Robin joins us on line three. Let's say hi to her. Hi, Robin. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody. I was calling because, first of all, thank you for doing the show, and thank all of you for all the work you do. You're all fantastic. It's wonderful. It just warms my heart to hear this program. And what I wanted to ask about and is about women and girls and economic empowerment issues. And we still see women making 79 cents to the dollar that a man makes for the same work. And sometimes I think as much as we can do to inspire young women and girls, they hit the wall when it comes to some of these economic issues. And I just was thinking about all the good work that you're doing with girls. My suspicion is that it is helping to inspire them to be more economically successful as they grow. But I wanted to just pose that to your panel and ask them to maybe address some of these economic issues.
Terrific question, Robin. Let's do a roundtable on that one. Kim, you want to lead off there?
Well, I'd really love to hear Roxanne's input because Roxanne's been doing a lot of great research on these issues. And we've been doing a longitudinal study on our SciGirls from day one. So we have 11 years of data. So I'd love for Roxanne to share some of that.
So I think it's a great question posed by Robin. And I think I look at what our girls talk about in SciGirls, and I'm sure Erica can also speak to like the idea of empowerment And what I see, not with our specific girls, but in general in research, is once women enter the workforce, there's a lot of pushback. So when women are asking for raises or negotiating for salary dollars when they first start in a career, it's often seen as unfeminine to be too assertive or to demand a dollar amount to demonstrate your worth. And they're not given practice with having this kind of dialogue or negotiation skills, or they're judged negatively based on their negotiation skills. And this is across all career moves, I would say, for women. And there are programs out there, particularly I focus on women in STEM, so there are programs out there for women in STEM on how to negotiate when you get your first job offer, how to negotiate the salary, the lab space, the moving expenses, all of these things, kind of akin to Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In book. But this whole idea of whatever you start with in your career, that affects the rest of your career because it's built on your original salary dollars. And helping women to realize that it's okay to demand a dollar amount to demonstrate your worth and to not be afraid to do that. And I think the STEM fields are some of the economically most lucrative because there's so many opportunities and those are high-paying careers. And actually, STEM careers have the lowest gender gap of all careers, which is something that a lot of policymakers will discuss. But there's definitely a stigma for women in the workforce when they are trying to negotiate those salaries or ask for raises, and they have to do it in a way that doesn't make them look bad in the eyes of their employers. So it's a tough road out there, and I appreciate Robin's posing that question.
Thank you for all your work, Roxanne. You do terrific work, and it's great to hear you all on a panel.
Well, and I would like to just build on what Roxanne said. I actually was just started. I had the Lean In book referred to me several times. I'm like, I guess I need to read this thing. And what I found most powerful about what we've been discussing here and what these programs do is they help girls and women advocate for themselves. They give them a network of people in their field or within their community that can help them navigate that first career. Or maybe it is getting into a PhD program. The thing from the Lean In book that really struck me, and I think about my own personal career path, is there were two things about how men and women were paid. And when they did some research within the book, it noted that men were hired based on potential and women were hired based on achievement. When you're starting out, how are they going to know what your achievement possibility is? And so what I think the Lean In book and what I definitely do within our organization, Girls on the Run, is give women opportunities to grow, to prove themselves and see that potential. And so I don't know how we change hiring practices, but to give women the tools and young women the tools they need to know what I should be paid, to know the skills, to know my value and how to communicate that and have, you know, go in. Unfortunately, women have to go in more prepared than men when you're going into a job interview. And so I think that's also something really interesting to think about of how can we help our young women advocate for themselves and position themselves. And that's not only in their career path, but also in what they're doing in the community. We talked about politics and OASIS doing A Women Can Run. Maybe politics is their passion. And so how can they get involved in a local campaign? How can they look? Because I think there's a lot you can learn in school, and there's a lot of great after-school programs that give you skills. But real-life experiences, I think as an employer myself, that is so much more powerful to me than book learning. Not to say that that isn't valuable, but it could, as far as an employee, I could build someone's skills. But to have just that, the innate ability of how to navigate a situation and create resources and bring people together, that you don't learn that in school.
No. Trish Hanson, talk a little bit about the different perception of, let's just say, assertiveness as expressed male and female. We kind of know what happens when a guy goes in loaded for bear. He's a hard charger, and he puts his cards on the table, and this is the way it's going to be. That is very much perceived differently by, I would suspect, most folks in comparison to a female who does the same thing. She is going to be, in many instances, perceived as a rhymes with witch.
Right, exactly. And that's unfortunate. I mean, we see that all the time, and we hear about that all the time. And listening to everyone talk, I think that's what's wonderful about all of our programs. One, we're giving opportunities for these women, these young girls, and helping them gain confidence. And I think that's so important. Educating yourself, like Eric was saying, about, you know, knowing how much you're worth, knowing your value, but also knowing your confidence, having that confidence to say, you know what, no, I deserve this. I have the same education. I have the same, you know, work ethic, whatever it may be. I am confident enough to go in there and do that. And I can do it in such a way that I don't have to be called the name that, you know, rhymes with witch. You know, I think that's key when we start with these programs when the kids are younger, and knowing at a young age about equality and how it is important, you know, when they get older, that's something that's instilled in them at such a young age that hopefully will, you know, progress throughout the rest of their lives.
Okay, and Carlos Villa, in a case like the camps that you have at the Mag Lab there, also creating that expectancy that, yes, you'll be dealing with boys and other girls, and how do you navigate some of these things in a very, very subtle way? Because you're still focused on, you know, more of the nuts and bolts of what they're supposed to be learning at the camp.
Right. Well, actually, to tag on with one of the things that Trish was talking about is that the ability is there. If you go to grade school and you look at the boys and girls doing science and math, the ability is equal. They both have the ability to achieve. It's the confidence and the interest that starts to waver when you get into middle school, and that's why these camps are so important. SciGirls is there to really push that and let the girls know, hey, you can do this. It gives them, as Kim has said, the safe space for them to do that science. And we have co-ed camps at the lab as well. Those are the ones that are starting on Monday. And there are students that excel in both of those camps, mm-hmm. boys and girls. There are boys and girls that excel in the co-ed camp. And, of course, in SciGirls, we can see them excelling. We've got all that research to back it. So both of those camps are important, and there are students that excel in both of those areas depending on what type of learner. If you go to a classroom and you ask the teacher, how do your students learn? They'll say, well, which student? Because every student learns a little bit differently, and that's why these camps are here, because all of these kids are learning a little bit differently, and some excel being surrounded by boys and girls, and some excel being in the one-sex camps.
Yeah, and it sounds like some teamwork is really important there. How do you foster that kind of thing?
I just wanted to continue on Robin's question. I just think it's really critical that we find ways to provide young girls mentors. And those mentors then help them navigate the space and give them confidence. And if you look over from the Lean In book to other very successful women, they will often comment that it was a mentor that really helped them get to where they are. So I think that if we can give that message out to young girls to seek out those mentors, find those people who you can go to talk to, who will coach you in positions so that you are ready to be hired into. We need more women in positions of power so that we can change that culture of who gets hired. Because I'm telling you, if it comes up to a man and a woman up for the same job, the man always gets it. So we need to change that dynamic. We need to change it where more women are picked for those positions because the women are in the position to do the hiring. Then we'll get more equality across our workforce.
Yeah, but we're not just talking about jobs and little kids here, guys. We're talking about essentially a remaking of society in some pretty fundamental ways.
And it will be threatening to many.
Yeah, this is a social and environmental issue from the very start. And I'll throw myself under the bus too. I was guilty of it. I have a boy and a girl. And when I had the girl, my very first thought was, okay, I'm having a girl, pink, princess, ponies. And I was like, okay, my passion for my boy stuff, I'm going to put aside. But now that I got over that thinking and I started to realize anyone can do anything, I'll tell you what, my girl, and my passion is Transformers. Anybody that knows you will tell you that. My girl plays with my Transformers more than my boy does. He doesn't have that interest. And I was there. I was like, okay, I having a girl first, I guess I can't do that with her. And that was my bad. And I've overcome that. And like I said, it is a social environmental issue. And it's just we have to change ourselves. We have to change the way we think to improve these conditions.
Yeah, there's that teamwork again. We all have to mm-hmm. redefine a lot of what we think is us.
And this isn't just about girls, too. We need to be helping our young boys. And we need to raise boys that are sensitive and conscious of opportunity and their value. Because if they feel their value and are kind, considerate human beings, then that will also help girls as well. So this isn't just about girls. It's also about our boys.
We've got less than 5 minutes remaining in our Perspectives program on WFSU-FM talking about empowerment of girls, but guys too, at 414-1234, our local number, 800-926-8809, or perspectives at WFSU.org. Erica McKibben, you got another Girls on the Run class coming up now. Coming off of an all-time terrific turnout of 450-plus over there at Southwood. So another class going to be building here so you can have another run. Graduation, we call it, in December?
Absolutely. So we have two seasons in the spring and in the fall, and our fall season kicks off in September. We will open registration in August, and our celebration, which Carlos did say, I'm going to call him out on the radio that he's going to come run. It's going to be his first 5K
in a while
on December 3rd.
I got to start training now.
Yeah, he just took out the back door. Yeah, just once around the block here, and that will be 1/4 mile there, Carlos. I measured it out there. But as far as MoLab is concerned, Trish, you got the thing going on with the city of Tallahassee here with the summer camp, but then what's ahead for MoLab as we head into the fall season?
Yeah, so we're hosting our summer camp, which is Summer Camp Sparking, $90, 11 weeks of that, in addition to the TAP 8-week program. And then come fall, we're back in the school systems doing hands-on science education and outreaches and community events and trying to get this MoBus on the road and working on that hopefully some more.
Okay. Well, do you have an estimated time when you're going to have that up and running? I know that has been a bugaboo bear for you guys because that is a huge project.
Yes, yes. Well, first we need to get the roof fixed, and we have the funds to do that. So that's number one on our list. And then working with community folks, and community is a key word for all of us. It takes a community to help us all out, and we've got a great community here to help start the retrofit process. And some folks are willing to help us, do some demolition on the inside and then start building from there.
That's going to be exciting once you get that up and on the road. It'll make your life, I think, a little bit easier as you go hither and yon, reaching the various school systems with your programs. Trish, well, over at the Mag Lab, Roxanne Hughes, what's cooking after this summer's camp program that you have and the upcoming Sci-Girl situation?
Well, I'll let Carlos tell you a little bit about our fall opportunities.
Okay, Carlos, you're on.
Yeah, well, we got the summer camps all through the summer. Sci-Girls will be the last 2 weeks of July. And then starting in September, middle school mentorship. We take middle school students, and this is a fantastic program, from around the county. On Friday mornings, instead of going to school, they come to the lab, work with the scientists in lab. So they get an actual lab experience. But for every all the other students in schools throughout the county, we have our outreach program going on year-round through the school year. That's free to all schools. All they got to do is go to our website, National Magazine. maglab.org, request educational outreach, and we come out to the schools and do hands-on activities, which is an important another important aspect of SciGirls is that we are always doing hands-on opportunities for all the students. So we bring the materials, we do activities in the classrooms, and it's all free of charge for teachers.
Do most of these students and their parents even realize that they are getting to play with one of the most advanced research facilities on the planet? It would almost like be going to Switzerland and turning over CERN to, you know, a middle school class or something.
Yeah, and a lot of national labs throughout the United States have educational aspects, and ours is right here in our backyard. It still breaks my heart when somebody says, "Magnet Lab, what's that?" And I'm like, "Really? We've been here about 20 years
now."
I was going to say,
after nearly a quarter of a century, you think people would – but that is something that we have as an opportunity and a resource that very, very few other places in the world can attest to. And I'm so glad that we could make use of it here, Kim Kelling.
Real quick, this Saturday, come to WFSU for Splash and Bubbles. It's all things related to the ocean, and it's for children 2 to 8 years old and – a little older, too, if you love the sea.
Bring your swimsuit and snorkel.
And
it's going to be a blast.
It's all free and it's fun.
Kim Kelling, Carlos Villa, and Erica McKibben, Trish Hansen, Roxanne Hughes, thank you all for coming on Perspectives and cluing us in on some very powerful young women and girls today. Appreciate it, guys. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. We had Taylor Cox doing the board work today and Lydell Rawls on the phone and email connection. And I'm Tom Flanagan. We are going to be talking a little bit about some fascinating opportunities when it comes to something else next week, and we'll tell you about it coming up right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.